Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Pitch Talk.
We are fans of football dropping vlogs, videos and podcasts on the beautiful game.
Check out our videos on YouTube and Instagram's IGTV,
including special feature segments,
5 minutes with the G,
the straight shooting view,
coaching with JBK. We produce, record and edit video content
and audio on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts,
Verbal, Podomatic,
Anchor,
Spotify
and other podcast platforms.
Join the Pitch Talk revolution on Twitter, Instagram,
Facebook,
and www.pitch-talk.com.
The pitch is where we eat.
The pitch is where we sleep.
And the pitch is where we talk. Pitch Talk podcasts and videos are brought to you in association with LE Bikes. Begin your journey into electric bikes. Visit lebikes.co.uk. Welcome to
the Straight Shooting View.
Hey everybody, what is up? My name is Straight Shooting LJA and welcome to part 3 of my review of the FIFA Uncovered Netflix series. The episode titled, The Chickens Come Home to Roost. So let's get to it. To start with, Qatar beating the USA, South Korea, Japan and Australia is actually kind of crazy when you think about it. Especially with the USA hosting the World Cup in 1994. But one of the things I found most peculiar is that Japan and South Korea went for separate bids, considering they did so well co-hosting the World Cup in 2002 together. It's a lot of fun. Qatar was definitely the wrong winning bid, and the best technical bid being America was pretty obvious. But fast forwarded in time, and as mentioned, at least the USA got 2026 with Mexico and Canada, which will also be historic as it will be the first World Cup with 48 teams. So it worked out for them. However, us, England, well, we still have nothing after all these years. By the way, Piers Morgan can do one. Seeing him pop up on CNN actually made my blood boil, as this was around the same time of the Levinson inquiry into the phone hacking scandal. So, glass houses and stones, eh, Pierce? Guido Tognoni saying the only reason the World Cup for Qatar was very difficult to explain is an odd soundbite, as it's not difficult to me at all and can be summed up in two words: corruption, bribery. But he was right in saying that for FIFA it was a disaster, especially as it was at the time FIFA had a focus on it relating to bribery. No better way to deflect attention from bribery allegations than to award 2 World Cups at the same time and both countries looking like they bought them. Tognoni, though, again, was right, blaming FIFA, as FIFA are the system and the system is FIFA. They put the system in place to be exploited, and Qatar and Russia, in my view, both exploited said system to get World Cups and the billions that go with them. Billions of pounds, dollars, euros. The questions of why go to a country so hot? Why go to a country that needs to build stadiums? Why go to a country so small with a team that is ranked so low? The last of those questions is actually hilarious, considering, again, fast forwarded in time, as everyone expected, Qatar got dumped out of the group stage after 2 defeats, becoming the first ever host nation to have that dubious honour. So, karma. The questions about human rights and if European fans will be able to get there to Qatar were also interesting questions. And the human rights issue was probably the most important. As we discussed on Pitch Talk Live shows, lives shouldn't have to be sacrificed to build stadia, let alone grounds that won't ever be used afterwards. But FIFA definitely didn't expect the backlash. I mean, to me, they thought they were above it. But the Qatari representative, Hassan Al-Tawadi, you're going to hear that name a fair bit more, who was the secretary general for their bid, saying he was euphoric, then had bouts of depression because of the backlash. It's like, to me, he came across as a clown trying to make himself look sympathetic when he was anything but. I mean, he even tried to put on the waterworks, which is no, didn't wash for me. Especially as Blatter said it wasn't about money, it was about expanding the game, when we could all see it had been down to bribery. So it clearly was about the money. And Blatter saying to Ricardo Teixeira that he wanted him to vote USA and not Qatar was weird. But the five confederation heads, Platini, Warner, Issa Hayatou, Leon and Mohammed bin Hamman, all aligning with Qatar, it wasn't odd if bribery and corruption was in play. But Blazer finding out Warner had voted for Qatar was interesting, as it went against his own confederation's bid, the USA bid. So that was strange. But again, when you look at the reasoning, bribery, it then isn't strange at all. But I don't think Blazer was disappointed. I think he must have been pissed. And fast forwarding again, remember Chuck Blazer becomes a whistleblower. Again, more on that later. So Qatar wanting to be a force for good and show the Arab world can bring people together by hosting such a prestigious event as the World Cup. Okay, that's fair enough. Got no problem with that. Same with wanting to get out of the shadow of Saudi Arabia. Fair enough. Got no problem with that. But the way they did it, basically, for me, erased any goodwill towards those sentiments. I mean, those would have been legitimate marketing tools to get people on side. But in my view, they took the shortcut way. Them wanting to become a massive player and influential in the game, again, is fair, but it's the underhanded methods they used. The fact they had to completely build an infrastructure in terms of stadia, hotels, etc. And there was no football tradition there. It also made it sinister that they won. And the fact that average temperatures in July were 40 degrees. That should comfortably have been a disqualifying factor. And I said that back in 2010. Because you can literally kill players in that heat. You could kill people. And that's not even embellishment. FIFA Chief Inspector for the 2018 and 2022 bids, Harold May Nichols' testimony was interesting when he spoke about the report with disinformation contained, as he would have been the person to verify any information and nobody called him. So in theory, the FIFA Executive Committee, as I've said before, didn't read any of the dossiers that every country was supposed to submit. And I've always felt that they didn't read it on purpose because, as said on Pitch Talk live shows at the time, you can't read the dossiers and miss out those huge red flags, especially the heat. Because if players die on the pitch, you're liable. I mean, imagine the lawsuits from that. I mean, you think the backlash was bad from the decision made of Qatar hosting. Imagine players dying due to heat stroke on the pitch because they're playing in dangerously high temperatures. Imagine a backlash from that. Another interesting part, though, relates to FIFA's own rules. And Maine Nichols said that the Qatar 2022 bid looked like a government project being channeled through football. And I thought to myself, FIFA rules literally prohibit government interference. As Nigeria have found out before, when they got banned by FIFA from AFCONs. I think it's been like two AFCONs they've been banned for that reason, government interference. And it was an interesting point from Maine Nichols that if the Exco doesn't care that you can't play the World Cup in May, June, July, then why would they care about workers' rights and conditions? Don't pretend you do when you don't. 2009, though, was an interesting year, considering at the beginning of it, nobody knew about Qatar. And they had a small team with no knowledge of FIFA politics or football itself. But of course, it was crucial to get Bin Hamman on side. There's your link, the Asian Football Federation president, especially as a Qatari citizen. But it was interesting that he said the size and weather of Qatar would not support a World Cup. Although it was unsurprising that he was one round eventually, because come on, he's Qatari and like Beckham being English and wanting England to win the 2018 World Cup bid. I can understand Bin Hamman wanting the World Cup in Qatar. I'm not saying it's right, but I understand it. And the Qatari bid team, the power that Bin Hammam had was critical for them in swaying other voters on the executive committee, and they were smart to use his stroke to help grease the wheels, if you will. I mean, Qatari sponsoring of the African Football Congress in Angola, it sounds to me like greasing the wheels. And Hassan Al-Tawadi saying in his speech in Angola was part of a turning point, was giving himself way too much credit. But it was interesting that the Exco members started speaking to the Qatari team, and they used Africa getting a World Cup as a psychological tool to help certain, to help sway certain Exco members. I mean, it was as smart as it was unethical. If Africa can have a World Cup, why can't the Middle East / the Arab world? Which on the surface is a fair question and a fair point. But then it turns sinister when you hear that day the Qatari Federation offered $1 million to Issa Hayatou, then upped it to $1.5 million for his vote, and used the other, and used for the other two voting African Federation heads. The sinister show begins. It's disappointing, though, that Africans were the first dominoes to fall. But hey, as I've said on many a Pitch Talk show and podcast, football is an unscrupulous sport. And Phaedra Al-Majid, the international media officer for the Qatar 2022 bid, saying she never saw money and didn't know where the money went. It came across to me like her just trying to make herself not look like a total heel. Especially as she had the get-out clause of being told that it was all going to football. The irony of her getting fired was funny, though, and it did make me chuckle. Her getting given 3 days to leave the state of Qatar literally made me laugh. Because when you lie down with a dog, you wake up with fleas. You got used to persuade voters to your side, then fired. In the immortal words of Vince McMahon in 2000, life sucks and then you die. And there's no honour among thieves. And it's no surprise she started the ball rolling in regards to bribery doubts about Qatar and buying of votes with her off the record conversation with a journalist about buying votes. No such thing as off the record with a journalist. But Blatter saying innocent until proven guilty and there's no evidence about FIFA being corrupt was laughable even back in 2010, as I was saying on Pitch Talk shows. Staying with Phaedra Al-Majid, I couldn't have any sympathy for her when she was saying she was getting threats and fearing for her life, because you should always know who you're working for, especially when you're dealing with millions of pounds, dollars, etc. And threatening her to sign off an affidavit saying she made up the allegations, to me, was proof of guilt. Because if you have nothing to hide, then what issue do you have with false accusations? As the truth will set you free. Hassan Al-Tawadi, though, showed no concern or regret for the Phaedra Al-Majid situation, which was telling for me, because as said earlier on, he was putting on the waterworks about euphoria then depression, but he didn't have a care in the world for someone who was getting their life threatened. Yeah, here's one side, here's the other side of the neck. He's talking out of both. The Thai gas deal, I had personally never heard about before, but Bin Hammam securing those sort of deals with voting countries makes total sense, with a Thai Exco member, and again, shows greasing of the wheels. And it being denied, again, par for the course, along with the Emir of Qatar visiting Brazil to persuade them to vote Qatar, again, greasing the wheels. With Qatar Airways always doing trips to Brazil, again, it's a case of you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Platini, coming back to him again, going to lunch with French President Nicolas Sarkozy, and an emin from Qatar was interesting, but him not being forewarned was just odd. But remember in an earlier episode, it was said that Platini didn't want to know about the sinister side of the politics of the game. But of course, Nicolas Sarkozy had his own agenda and told Platini it would be in the best interest of France to vote for Qatar and not USA. So Platini falling into Sarkozy's trap proves once and for all that, as I've always said, Michel Platini is a moron, which I take great pleasure in saying. But sadly, it meant that France were voting for Qatar, and because Platini had major sway as head of UEFA, others would follow suit. And the sad thing is, Platini tried to make himself look like less of a corrupt imbecile by saying maybe Sarkozy knew he was going to vote for Qatar. And it's like, no, dude. If you fast forward again, I always wondered how Platini got into the pocket of the Qataris, and the Qatari state fund buying Paris Saint-Germain makes even more sense. And then being able to dodge financial fair play sanctions for fiddling the value of sponsorship. Remember, financial fair play, FFP, was actually Platini's idea on multiple occasions. Makes even more sense. I mean, we always knew he was in their pocket, and I guess Sarkozy was talking about this. But the French Qatari trade deals and the massive beIN Sports TV deal, which at the time I thought was oddly lucrative, considering the French league is not that big a draw. It's politics and football mixing at the highest level. And I always say it's never good to mix those two. But again, Hassan Al-Tawadi doubled down, saying the facts are on the ground. And it's unrealistic that they wouldn't utilise those deals to win a World Cup. He came across to me as an arrogant prick. Literally an arrogant one. Trying to reduce the importance of the World Cup after earlier, and especially during the bidding process, overstating the importance of the World Cup bid and how crucial it was to the future of Qatar. And also bear in mind the billions the World Cup is worth. Very odd. The stuff he went on to say, Al-Tawadi, about the stereotype of sheikhs throwing money around isn't a stereotype. It's literally been shown as true, as a fact. And the Qatar World Cup, it wouldn't, won't, and didn't change that perception. Especially when you look at sheikhs buying up football clubs and literally throwing money around. You got Man United up for sale at the moment. Qatar's being linked. Qatar didn't win on the merits of their bid at all. And again, that's been proven beyond the shadow of a doubt. Bin Aman, though, being uncomfortable with what Blatter was doing and mounting a challenge against him, was one of the parts I've been waiting for in this documentary series. Because we did Pitch Talk segments on this during our live shows, the era of Pitch Talk Live. And Bin Aman considering Blatter as a friend was hilarious. Because, again, it's another person who thinks there's honour among thieves. Bin Aman thought that Blatter wasn't going to run for a third term and was offended by Blatter not wanting to step aside, which sounds almost quaint. But back in 2011, as mentioned on Pitch Talk Live shows, it annoyed me to no end, because this turned into a coronation in 2011, not an election. You can't have an election with just one person running. Shaka Hislop was right, though. He had ruined the name of FIFA in football, and there needed to be a new person in Blatter. But Blatter showed that, just like with Havelange, he has no allegiance to anybody but himself. Blatter supporting Bin Hamad's competition for the FIFA seat in Asia was odd. But remember what Blatter did to Lennart Johansson. Anybody who opposes gets metaphorically buried. Blatter randomly announcing the $1 million development grant to the CONCACAF after Bin Aman got refused a visa really does show the reach FIFA had. Especially with Bin Aman saying they had no reason to refuse his visa to get into the US. Blazer and Warner being bribed, I mean, that was pretty clear. And Bin Aman wanting to run against Blatter became even more of an uphill battle. The development grant was clearly a bribe. I mean, so close to the 2011 election as well. The Port of Spain meeting in May of 2011 that Blazer tried to get Warner to stop was very strange. But Warner feared nobody. And he was happy to extend the olive branch to Bin Aman and the Puerto Rican football president. I mean, that was interesting. As he said, there was $40,000 in cash to use for whatever he wants in football. But he at least admitted he had some scruples where he wouldn't have taken it if he knew it was in exchange for his vote. But it was good to hear that he gave it back, or so he said. But you know, most did take it. Most of them did take those 40 grand, those 40 grand bribes. The plot thickened, though, when some reported that they'd basically been bribed. And it made me think back to Blazer. I mean, I think Blazer knew that with his connections and proximity to Jack Warner, this overt and blatant bribery would come back and bite him on his considerably large ass too. I mean, Warner getting turned in by Blazer was hilarious in my view. And again, honour among thieves. There is none. And Blazer snitching on Warner, who had been a friend of his, was nuts. But again, it was my view that Warner didn't care because he was bulletproof. I mean, Bin Haman got caught in a trap to smear him. And Bin Haman was always going to, how can I say this, take the fall. Because Warner had major influence. And as heard on the recordings with him trying to sway people. As heard. Blazer and Warner's relationship, though, you could see was breaking down. And it was actually funny. Because Chuck Blazer was on Sky News talking about Warner's future and trust and etc. And Blatter saying about, oh, what crisis? Should definitely have triggered a rerun of the bidding. As there was a shed load of evidence, and the Port of Spain meeting definitely gave Blatter a chance to get rid of any competition. I mean, the Qatari Emin meeting with Blatter was sinister as hell. I mean, the Emin saying Qatar will support Blatter and Bin Haman will withdraw, as he did. We did a pitch talk show on that because I was apoplectic at the time. See the FIFA elections that never were segment for my feelings at the time. And Blatter won't say any more about how Qatar 2022 won the bid. For everyone was literally covering tracks. I mean, the 4-year term that Blatter won in 2011, as said, I was apoplectic at the time, but Warner and Bin Haman being suspended and Warner making threats gave me flashbacks to the 2011 pitch talk shows when this was unraveling in front of our very eyes and we were almost doing weekly special feature segments on it. I mean, we knew Warner had a lot on Blatter and him being cleared of wrongdoing was BS, but it all hurt FIFA's reputation. And Blazer basically being labelled a hero, that's a joke. Because all he was doing was saving his own ample posterior, as he'd done before. And he did again later in 2015. More on that later. Those thinking that Chuck Blazer had a passion for the game and the journalists saying he was brave and needed to be squeaky clean are morons. Because to smear someone else, you don't have to be squeaky clean, as Blatter has clearly shown over the years. All you have to do is have more dirt on someone else so you look like the lesser of two evils, especially as most people don't look beyond the headline. I mean, Mel Brennan was right about Blazer. He definitely was an engineer of what was wrong and a catalyst, and he benefited for decades. And as I said, Blazer was not a savior. The irony of Chuck Blazer living at Trump Tower is hilarious. And the amount he was profiting from every single CONCACAF deal was just so wrong. But sadly, it wasn't even just him doing it. Mike Gator, the FBI special agent normally dealing with organized crime, was interesting. And his remit of broadening their search for international crime that affects the United States made it clear where they needed to target. And that was FIFA. Because as I've said since 2015 on pitch talk shows and videos, the Americans saw the multi-billion pound gravy train leaving them at the station and they wanted in. To me, that's always been why they wanted to get involved. And it makes them, like Chuck Blazer to some, look like the saviors of football. But they're not. The late Andrew Jennings, I wish I'd met him at the time, he was trying to expose corruption in football. as we were on Pitch Talk Live shows as well. And as said on Pitch Talk Live shows, we were doing similar. But Warner jumping before he was pushed, in terms of quitting whilst he was suspended, in my opinion, was smart. He could go back to Trinidad and Tobago and lob grenades from the safety of the bunker of a country he never has to leave again. Grenades such as the documents implementing Chuck Blazer, enriching himself with CONCACAF funds to Andrew Jennings. I mean, IRS special agent Steve Berryman was interested to me, not just as a Liverpool supporter, but because he seemed to have a passion for football. And the kind of passion that Blazer was purported to have. But the thought in my mind was seeing the FBI and the IRS getting involved was that if not for Chuck Blazer trying to throw others under the bus, the corruption scandal may not have been able to happen, as the IRS and the FBI wouldn't have had any jurisdiction, as they wouldn't have had an American to link to it, thus nothing directly impacting that country. So they probably would not have gone after FIFA at all. Again, sinister, self-serving motives. I mean, prosecutor Evan Norris from the US Department of Justice basically confirmed this when he said an aspect had to intersect with us, with the US, and of course, Blazer through their banking system, he did. He did intersect. The money passing from Switzerland to the US to the Cayman Islands, that was actually intriguing. And at this point, I was thinking, yeah, they may be going to the Panama Papers as the next topic. Was hoping. But again, that's another topic that we hit on a Pitch Talk Live show, and I was hoping they'd hit, as it literally proved bribery. I mean, FIFA were definitely running like the mafia / organised crime. And the offshore accounts and the shell companies, etc., again, wasn't of any surprise, but because they didn't know what the money was for from the wire transfers, they needed someone involved to explain it. And that man ended up being Chuck Blazer, the whistleblower. The IRS, though, looking for his tax returns and realizing he'd made all these millions of dollars and not submitted tax returns for 15 years. I mean, whoa. Now that was all they needed to get him to spill his guts. 15 years of tax evasion. Because Chuck Blazer would get put in prison for a long time for that level of tax evasion. So the IRS and the FBI at that point had a serious bargaining chip against the guy who could help massively in going after FIFA by using him as an informant. One thing though, Chuck Blazer being on a motor scooter was a hilarious mental image painted for me. But the money laundering, wire fraud, tax evasion, those charges, bloody hell, that would have seen him rot in prison easily for the rest of his life. 75 to 100 years is no joke in terms of time. But you knew Blazer would have to buckle because of that. And calling himself a fat crook from Queens had me laughing as a comment. And that's from him, not me. I'm not going to say he was honest, but at least Chuck Blazer knew what he was. A fat crook from Queens. Great. But what do you think? What did you think of episode 3 of the Netflix series FIFA Uncovered? The chickens come home to roost. Very, very interesting. Started to get into the FIFA corruption scandal. A lot of foreshadowing. But it is one of them ones. Qatar beating the USA, South Korea, Japan and Australia. Sounds even more crazy the more you say it. And it is one of them ones. Surely only corruption could have resulted in that. But what do you think about Chuck Blazer being the whistleblower? Was it just to cover his own back because he was looking at 75 to 100 years in prison for tax evasion? It is one of them ones, man. And also, fraud, money laundering as well. Mate, it was nuts. Did the IRS and FBI only get involved because the corruption passed through their nation? Offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands and the Panama Papers. It's a case of, were FIFA being run like an organized crime syndicate? I think so. with Blatter as the man, the Don. www.pitch-talk.com is the official website. Want to know your views? You can catch our podcast episodes there as well. Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, so many places you can catch the Pitch Talk podcast. Also, youtube.com/pitchtalk for all of our videos. At Pitch Talk on Twitter, tweet with us, follow us, see what we're up to. Facebook.com/pitchtalk, become a fan, become a friend, become a member of the group. Join the footballing revolution we are working so hard to create. At Pitch Talk on Instagram and on TikTok for vlog and podcast previews and more. We're also on Reddit at Pitch Talk. We are in so many different places where you can catch us. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, podcasts, our website, so many places, so many places. What did you think of FIFA Uncovered Episode 3? Let me know your views. I have been Straight Shooting LJA, and until next time, I will see you on part 4, the final furlong, the final part of FIFA Uncovered, my Straight Shooting View reviews on foes. Take care, peeps.
Join the Pitch Talk revolution.
Check out the official Pitch Talk website.
www.pitch-talk.com. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Pitch Talk.
We are fans of football, dropping vlogs, videos and podcasts on the beautiful game.
Check out our videos on YouTube and Instagram's IGTV,
including special feature segments,
5 minutes with the G,
the Straight Shooting View,
coaching with JBK. We produce, record and edit video content
and audio on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts,
Verbal, Podomatic,
Anchor,
Spotify
and other podcast platforms.
Join the Pitch Talk revolution on Twitter, Instagram,
Facebook,
and www.pitch-talk.com.
The pitch is where we eat.
The pitch is where we sleep.
And the pitch is where we talk. I can see you now.